Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to News Crunch, a new monthly segment on At Home with Victoria. Join TV journalist and news lady Victoria Gaither along with her smart, witty, and colorful guests as they crunch newsmakers and stories while putting their own spin on issues. Here's Victoria.
I always get so tickled when our show opens to smart and witty guests, because I at least think that the guests that we have on At Home with Victoria News Crunch are smart and witty, especially the first gentleman that is many, many of you that are fans of the show and that listen to the show. All of you know MK Entertainment co-host Michael Kay. Michael is joining us for the first time on News Crunch, so we're very happy to have him. Hi, MK.
Hey, baby. How are you? Glad to be here on News Crunch.
Yes. Your first time, so I'm very interested in hearing your thoughts as we talk about Rupert Murdoch and hear what you have to say. So you hold tight, and we're going to go ahead and bring in our other guest that's actually new to News Crunch, is Christopher Davis. Now, Christopher is very cool. I had the opportunity to meet him through one of our fans, MK, on Facebook, and we'll talk more about that later. But Christopher Davis is the founder. He's also the editor and the all-to-be-off for an online magazine called G-Man Magazine. Christopher, thanks for being with us, love. Happy you're here.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
And let's go ahead and bring in our third person who is on News Crunch this evening. His name may be familiar to some of you, Mike Cullip. Mike is actually does a lot of things. Personally, he's one of At Home with Victoria computer whiz guys that sort of helps me out. But when he's not doing that, he's one of the promotion managers for Drew Stevens. So, Mike, I'm glad you're here tonight.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I appreciate it and look forward to News Crunch.
All right, so here we go, guys. So basically the main topic that I wanted to talk about was, of course, is Rupert Murdoch. So this story to me really hit home because if any of you listen to me, you know that I'm a television news journalist. I've been a news anchor for over 15 years. I'm the person that sits behind the news desk and read the news to you and give you that information. But if you work in any, whether it's, I think, radio, television, newspaper, or magazine, in any news outlet in America, at least for me, there are always these sort of instances where, you know, sometimes things that people may want to do within the industry, you know, you may look at it as, wait a minute, that's kind of crossing the line. We weren't taught that. This is what you're not supposed to do. So it wasn't like, I mean, it was a big deal when the Rupert Murdoch scandal broke, but it wasn't a big deal to me because if you're in television news, you know, there's a lot of this stuff that actually goes on. I don't know anybody personally that did any of this, you know, craziness, but I just do know within our industry it goes on because everybody wants to be the first to get the story. Now, in Murdoch's case, what had happened with them, for I'm sure many of you guys already know, but in his case, a journalist from News of the World, which is now defunct, he shut it down, were accused of hacking into the voicemail of potentially thousands and thousands of people and also bribing police. So some of these people that allegedly they hacked into were members of the royal family, were talking athletes, were talking police officers bribing and giving information, lawmakers. And also I think what really kind of hit home to a lot of people were relatives of a deceased British soldier and a murdered schoolgirl that these journalists hacked in to the voicemail to kind of get this information to see what they were talking about and then, you know, print the story and get the information out there. So I want to start with entertainment co-host Michael Kay because unlike the other two guys, Michael really didn't follow the story. He was kind of busy doing his own thing, so he was very new to it. So MK, when you first kind of started following it, knowing that you were going to be on News Crunch, what was your overall thought? I mean, you certainly think that that's going too far for journalists to do something like that.
Well, I think without a doubt there's a certain amount of discretion that should be contained when one is working on a story. And when I actually, because I knew nothing, I try to watch as little bit of the news. Nothing's really good right now, so I try to steer away from that. And doing a little bit more research, I'm really shocked that he's an Australian too. I mean, usually I love all Australians. They're all, you know, lovely stand-up people, but I have no idea how he can even consider denying the allegations of a hacking. And that's what I'm having more of a problem with. At least if he had any integrity, he would actually pipe up and say, okay, you know what, yeah, we have. And yet he's actually, you know, he's given out, $700 million he's given out per hacking case, which to me is just an admission of guilt that you did it. So I don't even know why he's denying all this crap. But, yeah, it's definitely stepping over the line.
So, and Christopher, I guess with you, because like I mentioned before, you know a little bit about news and you kind of follow it because of your magazine. So when you first heard about it, were you even surprised, or what were your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I was pretty surprised. I listen to NPR quite a bit, and I try to stay up on my news, and I read a lot of magazines and things like that. So I definitely was surprised, because I think that there is a line. And correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a woman named Miley or Millie, and she was one mm-hmm. of the deceased. And they just talked about how they went in and deleted some of these voicemails from these parents. And I just thought, as, you know, human being, like, if someone went and deleted voicemails of my child and that's the only thing I had left, I mean, I think that's what's heart-wrenching to me, is to take that away from somebody because they're already going through enough.
I agree.
Yeah, I completely agree. Mike Cullop, what were your thoughts about it when you first heard about it and began to follow it?
Well, I definitely agree. I mean, I find it extremely unbelievable that Rupert Murdoch or the managing editor Rebecca Brooks knew absolutely nothing about the stuff that was going on. I think one thing that gets overlooked in a situation like this is all of the people of News of the World who are now without jobs. 270 people without jobs because a select few decided that they were going to put themselves above the law and decide to start, invading individuals' privacy. I'm a bit appalled about that.
Yeah.
Officers, that makes you sort of lose faith in the people who are supposed to be looking out for you, that police officers are doing this kind of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's scary.
Yeah, it certainly is. And something else that sort of ties into this, and we actually had this discussion on our first News Crunch, and we talked about that, Casey Anthony, and I keep not wanting to bring her name up, but she only ties into this conversation because, I don't know if it's a well-known fact in this country that people know, for example, Good Morning America, NBC News, and the morning and the CBS morning show. A lot of those shows do pay for interviews. You know, a lot of when they say exclusive, it is an exclusive in the sense that, yeah, that person is only, you know, giving you the information on your channel. But in a sense, it's actually a little bit deceiving because they actually pay for that. Now, within news organizations, they will say, well, Good Morning America and, you know, NBC and CBS, it's okay for morning shows to pay for those interviews because the standard is different. It's not like they're providing, quote-unquote, hard news. It's more entertainment. So if it's under entertainment, then it's okay to pay for it. And I know that we saw some of that with the jurors, with Casey Anthony, that were paid, you know, $35,000 to $40,000 for the interview and a trip, one young lady to Disney World. So that is different than we're talking phone hacking and all of that stuff. But Mike Cullop, how do you feel about paying people for interviews?
Well, honestly, Victoria, I don't really have an issue with that. I mean, if it's something that is news. A lot of times I turn on the news these days and it's not even worth watching. I mean, there's not a whole bunch of stuff on there that's really considered news. worthy. But, you know, and definitely I draw a line between paying someone for an interview and then versus hacking into someone's voicemail or cell phone, what have you, and finding information and then erasing that information or using it to benefit your company or yourself so that you're the first that has breaking news. Mm-hmm. So personally, I don't have an issue with someone paying someone for a story, but I do seriously have an issue with someone's privacy being invaded, and just so you're the first to have a story.
Right. And Michael K., what are your thoughts about that?
Well, before I comment on that, I just want to actually stand up for Rebecca Brooks right now, because I don't know if you've seen pictures of her and stuff, but maybe she had no idea of the hacking because she has no idea that she needs a really good conditioner and a heavy moisturizer. I mean, I'm seeing the pictures, and I know she must have been worried, sick, and not sleeping, but good Lord, girl. As for the paying guests and stuff, you know what? I think the jurors from the Casey Anthony trial maybe should have gotten a little bit of coin. That would, you know, everybody is really coming down on the jury for that. And I think as a public, we have to also remind each other that the jury process, I don't know if you've ever served on a jury, but I have back in Canada, and it's a serious hard nut job, and that was a really tough case to get through. So if someone wants to pay juror number 12 to go to Oprah and fly them out, you know what? I mean, thanks for your service for the length of that trial and putting up with such a gruesome thing as a civic duty. That kind of responsibility I got no problem with. When it comes to celebrity, you know, they get paid enough. I just think, you know, if you want to promote your crap, come on the show and let's get it going. But when it comes to things like that, I have no problem with people getting paid for interviews.
And Christopher, your thoughts?
I have a little bit of a different opinion. I kind of think, you know, with celebrities and stuff, it's a little bit more light and fluffy what they're doing to get paid for. But when it comes to, like, Casey, I think, as the public, I don't want to know that my news organization or, you know, entertainment source, whatever you want to call it, is paying somebody for that. It bothers me on a level. To me, it's sort of like with OJ, you know, paying for his interviews and things like that. I don't like it. So, but that's just my opinion.
And, you know, I think so, too. I think with me, and I'll tell you this story that's really interesting. This is when I was a reporter in the Midwest. The story wasn't like a big, big major story, but for that area, it was a major story. And I remember I went out to cover the story, and I was able to get a few exclusives on the story. But what was really funny was that the guys were like, well, Victoria, we'll give you an exclusive, but what are you going to pay us? So I thought, wow, I mean, like, you know, the idea or, you know, the perception that these guys approached me and said, hey, yeah, I'll do it, but how much is your station going to pay me? If you're not going to pay me, then I'm not going to do it. And I'm thinking, hell,
right.
You know, so when did the public decide that they can just come right on out to me or any reporter and say, hey, give us money and we'll go ahead and give you the story? Now, in my case, I ended up just saying forget it because, it, you know, it kind of gave my stomach the queasies and I was still able to do the story. And, you know, and it still turned out to be a good story. But just the thought that these people came to me and said, sure, Victoria, we'll do it. How much are you going to pay me? But I think what Christopher is saying, you know, for us, when we go to what journalism school, you know, something that they teach you as a journalist 101, besides the who, what, when, where, the 5 W's, they teach, you know, you just simply do not pay for interviews because then you're kind of beholden to that person. So that, mm-hmm. and the other problem with that is that if you pay for an interview, then people are going to really kind of pick and choose what information they're going to give you, and they tend to, this is apparently some study back then, but they tend to give you more salacious information as
mm-hmm.
opposed to facts because they think that that's what you want to hear. So
right.
I just
right.
kind of throw that out there. Now, you know, the whole entertainment thing, what some of the networks will do in terms of paying for those interviews, the networks see nothing wrong with it because they don't consider that quote-unquote hard news. Now, with the whole Casey Anthony thing, I'm still on the fence about that. Because I feel like, you know, if jurors had to spend that time and they have a story that they want to tell, you know, should they get paid for it or should they not? I mean, I'm really still on the fence about that.
I don't see anything wrong with that. I think it's just different with Casey. Yeah, I mean, Barbara Walters even talked about this the other day, and she said, you know, I'd love to do the interview. She said, but, you know, our news organization does not pay for the interviews, and we won't. And I think as a journalist, I think she's doing the right thing.
Right.
Can I comment on that just for a second? I'm just curious to know that, granted, you know, they don't pay for it, and Barbara wanted to go ahead and do the interview. As Victoria and Christopher, as journalists, I'm not a journalist. I come here and I talk funny stuff, and I have the best guests with the best music and the best projects and everything. But what I find is so funny that would that be journalism suicide? I mean, could that go either way? You know,
absolutely, yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's something
let's face it. If I'm a journalist, there's no way in the world I want to take that chance. I'm not going to take that chance with somebody like Casey Anthony to pin my career. I mean, you know, I hate to say this, but she is kind of, you know, not liked in America and even around the world. So it's sort of like anybody
kind
who becomes associated. I'm just trying to be politically correct.
Apparently killing your child is frowned upon or something.
Yeah. I'll let you guys kind of put it out there and say what I want to say. You know, Michael can tell you what category I was falling on. But, yeah, but I guess what I'm trying to say, someone like Casey Anthony, MK, it would be, you know, it could be journalism suicide, and I guess you'd have to make this decision, you know, is she worth it for something like that. But, Christopher, I wanted to ask you because just tell us quickly about your magazine, and then I'll ask the question. What do you guys do there?
Okay, well, G-Man, we just sort of started up in the past year, and it's this big collaborative effort with about 14 other contributors. And I sort of brought in their ideas and the projects they had been working on and combined them with mine. So we have just a wide range of people and different topics. And there's a little bit of fluff, but there's also, you know, important issues. And it's really been successful so far. And the next issue will be even bigger and even better, you know, because the ideas just keep flowing. So I'm very proud of it.
Well, with that said, I am assuming that you do have a certain set of standards and criteria that your writers believe in and how you conduct business. I'm sure that's true, right?
Definitely.
Right.
Yes.
So
I guess what I'm
trying to say is that, you know, I know for a fact I feel comfortable when I go online to see your magazine and I read the articles, and I know that that's really good information. They've got some good sources, and it's just not, you know, tabloid stuff. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I also think that these days, not even in America but in the world, there's this sort of blending of tabloid news with regular news, and sometimes I think it's hard for people to kind of, you know, figure out which is which. Would you say so, Michael?
I do, and I wanted to offer an opinion on something that both Michael and Christopher talked about. You know, journalists, in my opinion, are not held to any different standard than, say, you know, police officers or firefighters or lawyers or judges, in that, you know, there's certain boundaries that are drawn from a legal perspective, and then there are certain boundaries that are drawn from a moral perspective. And I think a lot of times those two things are confused. For example, with the Casey Anthony trial, you know, the she was found not guilty. For the most part, and I think, you know, I personally, and I would hope that, you know, journalists would share the same opinion, or at least most would not offer a penny to Casey Anthony for a book, an article in a magazine, a picture, or anything for her story. Now, on the other hand, you talk about the jurors who had to sit and endure, as Michael mentioned, such a long, lengthy trial. There's also a moral obligation there that, you know, with respect to pay. And I mean, those guys did a hard job. So morally, I think it is a good idea to offer them money to talk about, you know, what went on in their head. I mean, it is our justice system at work. And personally, mm-hmm. I think they did a good job, and they came up with the right verdict, given the evidence that they were presented.
Yeah, interesting. Christopher, did you have something to say about the when I was talking about the blending between sort of tabloid and traditional news?
Well, I mean, I think just for, you know, speaking for me, I don't really enjoy that kind of stuff. So what I tried to do with, you know, with G-Man is to create something that was inspiring and that it made people want to go out and maybe make a difference or just connect with people, because I think that there's such a disconnect in the world, you know, if we're, you know, gay, straight, bisexual, white, black, there's just this disconnect always. And so I wanted mm-hmm. to bring people together and connect people and not put everyone in a box. And so I think that was the whole idea. And I do get tired of that kind of media out there that's always separating us. And, mm-hmm. You know, if we put us together and put all of our ideas together, then we can see the similarities that we all have with each other.
And then that won't sell newspapers, probably, Christopher, unfortunately.
Right.
I don't know. We can only wish and dream for that day. I'm always a very optimistic person, but you and I both know that something like that is not going to sell newspapers. But I want to mention, as of late today, with the whole Rupert Murdoch phone hacking scandal, there was a 71-year-old man who was arrested in connection with the investigation into the phone hacking, and apparently he actually worked for Murdoch, so that was kind of the latest thing. But you know, something that I thought was also interesting in that entire scandal was how people started dying. You know, one of the main, and I can't think of his name right now, but one of the gentlemen, I don't know if he was a photographer or a reporter, but he actually was the one who kind of blew the whistle and kind of said, hey, this is what's going on. And then he ended up, was found dead in his home. And, you know, you really, like, I'm not a conspiracy theory type person, but, you know, when things like that happen, you do start thinking, wow, what is going on? I mean,
what makes you think you can trust the police now that they actually reported
right.
the correct information?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
that's
no,
what I
thought. You do have a point, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. I think, too, this is stemming back to 2005 with Murdoch and stuff, and it was all because of the Prince William thing. Apparently he fell and broke his leg or ankle or some damn thing, and they were the Buckingham Palace was very, very good to keep it under wraps, but there was also a leak at Buckingham Palace and in the hospital, and that's how Murdoch got the information. So that's what FBI officials are now looking at as to exactly how far back this goes. And, I mean, you know what, you can't be a billionaire and not realize that hacking is kind of wrong. I mean, you'd have to be headless to not realize
yeah.
that eventually this is going to get cut up. And I find it also funny, too, that the majority of these people are up in their years, in their 70s and stuff. I mean, back then, when they were young, I mean, you could still prank call someone and they didn't have call memory and shit like that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it was one of those things where it's the elder generation that are not maybe as tech savvy realizing that everything is traceable. And you know,
right.
I find it difficult to believe that they didn't know what they were doing. They would have to.
And I think about it too. For example, if I think about my life and every television station in my career that I've had the opportunity to work in, and I think about, for example, my immediate boss would be the producer. Then you have the assistant news director. Actually, the immediate boss would be the news director. I'm sorry. Then you have the assistant news director, the producer, the assignment editor, and then you've got the guys that always sit upstairs or the women who are the general managers, you know, of that station, and that is their responsibility. So I kind of sit there and I think about it. I'm just thinking in every single newsroom that I've worked, if something like that was going on, I have to say it would be very, very difficult to keep that under wraps. it would just be hard for that information not to at least get to the news director or to one of the producers or to the guy upstairs, because somebody, you know, is going to tell. So I guess because I'm in news and I kind of know the hierarchy of news and TV stations and newspapers, I just find it hard. Okay, maybe, you know, if you want to say Murdoch, you know, I still think he knew something, but I find it very hard that Rebecca Brooks didn't know anything. I just find it very hard to believe that she didn't know anything. I just do not believe that. I mean, you can't be the main editor of a newspaper and not know what's going on. It just doesn't happen like that.
Right. You know, and Victoria, one thing that you know, these billionaires multi times over, and a lot of CEOs, you know, they roll the dice. It's risk versus benefit. I mean, even if you know, it's I don't believe for a second he didn't know, and I also believe his son knew, but. You know, it does the benefit of getting this news first, putting it out, making money, being the best in your business, outweigh the risk of someone, leaking the information to the police or blowing the whistle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these are very powerful people. Rupert Murdoch, a billionaire 7 or 8 times over. He has very big corporate lawyers that can pay to keep people quiet.
Absolutely.
Do y'all think it's possible that, you know, I mean, that they really didn't know and maybe they just told their staff and things, you know, we don't want to know. Just do it. We don't want to know.
It could be bad,
you know,
yeah.
Is that possible?
Bad, yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, he runs so many things and has a stake in, like, everything. So how is it? In my mind, it seems somewhat impossible. I don't think completely, but it seems a little bit like he may have not known. So, I don't know.
That's a good point. I haven't thought of that. I think the biggest risk actually taken was by his third wife. Have you seen pictures of her? I mean, clearly they married
her. We're not talking about anybody's wife.
My goodness. You know,
no,
she's gorgeous.
No, but what I do
want to
say.
Hey, he picked a good one.
No.
She took up for him.
Yeah, she did.
That's what I would. That was the next thing that I wanted to bring up, and you guys just did. His wife was no joke. I don't know if you guys saw on television when the guy took the prize. I mean, the first person that was up was his wife. I mean, that woman jumped out of the seat like, no, you don't hit my husband. I mean, she became an overnight sensation on Twitter because everybody's like, who is this lady?
Is that the one who hit the guy with the pie? Is that because there was a woman? Oh, really? I didn't know that was the wife. And really,
I can't tell you how many times I hit replay on my TV to watch that. I was like, yeah, hit it, girl. Stand up for your man.
Absolutely.
And speaking of that, the guy did get arrested for doing that. But that, you know, I guess if you want to say something comical about the whole thing, I mean, I'm sure to Mr. Mark Murdoch that wasn't funny. But that was quite
You know, this guy's going to get, like, 6 weeks in jail, probably more time than Murdoch will ever see, which I find really interesting.
True.
Really interesting. So.
Probably. You're definitely right about something. Well, listen, guys, let's switch the subject just a little bit before we have to be done here. I did not want to leave without just getting your thoughts about the whole fiasco of Congress and the entire debt debate that took place that basically, I think, held us captive for what? How many days? Was it a couple of weeks? Will they not? I thought the whole thing was just absolutely ridiculous. And what it said to me, yet once again, is that, you know, to me, our lawmakers just don't get it, and they're just not really that concerned. Christopher, what do you think? You go first.
Well, I have so many thoughts on this because, you know, I'm very into politics. And what I think is that, you know, what was it, in April we had the, you know, the shutdown that was going to happen? I mean, it's just like they're trying to play this game constantly on us. You know, they're trying to play this game. And, you know, I'm a supporter of President Obama, but I do feel that he didn't push hard enough. He gave up a little bit. And I think in the end, what he really wanted out of this was for it to be pushed to 2013. That's really what he wanted. And then, you know, the Republicans, you know, they didn't want that because it looks good to go out and campaign and say, look, look what's in, you know, what's taking care of our country, and they can't do it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's this big political game. Now, I did have a solution.
And what about the Tea Party? What are your thoughts about the Tea Party, folks?
Well, the Tea Party, this is how I feel. I really am not a supporter of the Tea Party, but I can say they are the only people that actually stood by what they said they were going to do. The Democrats didn't do that, and the majority of the Republicans didn't. I mean, so, I mean, that's admirable, I guess, even though I don't agree with them.
Right.
You know, it would be nice to see the people that I voted for actually stick to what they say they're going to do and fight.
Gotcha.
I would have been happy. You know, I just wanted to throw this out there real quick. I had sort of an idea about what can we do about this, and I thought, what if we just let it go for, you know, 5 days past August 2nd? You know, I don't want America to hurt, but I do think that there is this sense of entitlement that everybody has. So if you take
mm-hmm.
everything away, and then people realize we have to make cuts, we have to do it, and it's going to take away from you and from your neighbor and from everybody. But there's this sense of entitlement that, you know, I'm untouchable. And so I think scaring people a little bit may help. Just
interesting.
An idea.
Mike Collip, what do you think? What are your thoughts on the whole?
Well, this is, for me, this is a Pandora's box. I was a veteran, and am a veteran, I should say. And one of the things that bothers me when we get into political stalemates, because I'm a Republican, you're a Democrat, we're here on the political spectrum, you're there on the political spectrum, and you know what? Daggone it, I'm not going to budge. That's not America. There are things that need to be given in. There are things that need to be taken. I agree 100% with what Christopher said. You know, there are tough decisions that need to be made in this country. If our children or grandchildren are going to have retirement, or they're going to see you know, medical care when they get old. But you know, one of the things that bothers me the most is senators and congressmen sitting up on Capitol Hill, playing around with our soldiers' money while they're
mm-hmm.
deployed overseas, not at their wish, but
mm-hmm.
By the orders of the President of the United States, serving for our democracy. And we can't seem to find a middle ground between the Democrats and the Republicans to start passing budgets and getting the bills paid. You know, when it starts hurting those who are defending our very freedoms that we're actually using right now, freedom of speech,
mm-hmm.
I have huge issues with Congress. And I'll be honest with you, I don't trust anyone up there anymore. It doesn't seem like anyone keeps their words. They get up there on Capitol Hill and they get either money. I mean, there's so many stories of corruption going on. You know, so and so's got you know, been given all this money to put this in this bill, or it all is mind-boggling and very frustrating for me when I go to the ballot box to vote anymore.
I certainly think or know for a fact, because I've spoken to many, many people about this within my own community and just within my travels. I mean, I certainly think most people, you know, really do feel the exact same way that you feel. I mean, most of the people that I talk to, some of them are Republicans, some of them are Democrats. I haven't actually met a Tea Party person yet, but all of them say, you know, Victoria, it's not about, you know, me being a Republican or them being a Democrat or Democrat and Republican. What it's about is, you know, the Washington where people got together to compromise for a greater good, as opposed to this division that's actually taking place. MK, did you have any thoughts that you wanted to say about that or not?
Do I have any thoughts on this? Oh, but I do. You know, I find it $14.29 trillion, and then I'm asking for $2.4 trillion more and stuff. It doesn't even matter at that point. I really do. I tend to be more of a conspiracist theorist, whatever, how you pronounce that.
Mm-hmm.
In the terms of, I think things are a lot worse than they're really even letting on. because this has gotten into a spiral. To me, what I think Obama proposed was just basically to refinance America. I'm borrowing on. I have some equity in the country. I need more money to go ahead and pay off this debt. I don't know where we can look to for answers, and the cuts will have to be are inevitable. There's going to be cuts to Medicare. There's going to be cuts to Social Security, which I don't even know how they can even rule that as being a possibility. But, you know, the last people you want to go ahead and screw over are your seniors who have backed, you know, whatever political party for how many years. But, yeah, I think things are kind of a lot worse than they actually appear, and it's just this is just a smokescreen to maybe wake us up. I mean, I think going back to your comment about news and stuff, I think the dumbing down of America is certainly a consideration where all you want to do is be kind of entertained, because if you actually knew how bad the situation was, you'd be really concerned. So that's what I see this as being, as Obama's attempt at kind of, you know, waking up America.
Well, don't you think we should still be pretty concerned, though, because with this bill, you know that they still have to vote on all of the stuff that they're going to cut for sure. It's not done. So
yeah.
It's just going to continue, and that's what everybody, it'll sort of go away for a little bit and out of people's minds, and then towards the end of September, you wait, it's going to be the same thing again.
I agree.
All
those
politicians are going to go on all these shows and,
well,
you know, be battling against each other.
It's almost like, too,
yeah.
I mean, is the war over? I haven't heard anything about the war in the last, you know,
right.
month and a half, you know? It's like, I guess that's finished, so we'll just
right.
work on Murdoch now for this week.
Right.
I mean, I want to say real quick, I do believe, you know, what Michael said, you know, about compromise and all of that. I definitely agree with that. I think that there needs to be more compromise, but there is constantly this just bickering that really drives me crazy. I wish they would stay off the TV shows and go write a bill instead of complaining about someone
right.
else not writing a bill.
Right.
I'm like, well,
go
write your own damn bill.
Be quiet.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Go do some work and stay off the TV and be quiet. So listen,
yeah.
this last thing that I'm going to throw at you guys, I always kind of call it Victoria Surprise, something I'm sure that all three of you will be able to comment on. I just saw it on the news late yesterday as I was waking up to take my medicine as I'm dealing with the flu. And interesting story. You guys may have heard about it or you may not. And I don't know all the details, but enough that I think we can talk about it before we end tonight's News Crunch show. So there was a 8-year-old, first to start off, there was a call that went into a police station saying, hey, there's this truck that's driving pretty crazy on the road. People were calling in, so the police finally come out to the scene. They locate where this truck is. So the police are driving. They don't see anybody inside the driver's side. So, of course, immediately they're thinking, you know, what the hell is going on here? So the police officers get up to the truck, look inside, come to find out it's an 8-year-old boy who is driving this truck. He's got his 4-year-old sister in the back seat. His father is in the passenger side, and dude's drunk. And this kid drove 193 or 98 miles. I think he drove somewhere from Alabama or to Alabama. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, I was in complete shock. Now, I know there are, like, a lot of, you know, parents that put their kids in the lap, you know, and it's like, oh, this is how you drive and blah, blah, blah. But what I couldn't figure out from the story was that was the 8-year-old smart enough to say, Dad, you're drunk, you sit over there, don't drive, I'm going to drive us home? Or, you know, what happened there?
Good kid.
But the most interesting thing was they pretty much made it home. He pretty much got
wow.
them home.
Well, I think the dad handed the keys over. You know, at 8 years old in Alabama, I mean, you're already driving tractors, so, I mean, a car's nothing, you know? So, I mean, that's, you know, it's like, hey, son, you know, daddy's had one too many. I bet the
right,
dad napped the whole time.
I think it's pretty great. I have to tell you, I think it's great. You know, my dad, like you were talking about, sitting on the lap. The one fond memory I have of my biological father is sitting on his lap driving on the interstate, and he would let me do it all the time.
Mine
and when
too.
I was 10, you know, when I was 10, he would let me drive the car on the road by myself, and it was the coolest
thing. So, Christopher, this story for you is just not far-fetched. It's like, oh, okay.
Well, I mean, drunk in the passenger seat's a little bit, you know, a little bit far-fetched. But, hey, I think, you know, if that kid saves his dad's life and his sister's life, hooray, that's great.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
He thought enough to go ahead and take his sister, too.
Mike, call it, what do you think?
Wow. I just actually pulled the news article up. I hadn't heard of it before, but it's quite mind-boggling. I tend to agree with what Michael said. At probably age of 8, they were probably out with tractors and plowing the field anyway. So it probably wasn't. Exactly. I tend to agree with Christopher. If the outcome was everybody's alive, great. The father surely needs to be taught a serious lesson.
He actually was arrested, so I'm sure he was drunk in some other charges, but the father actually did get arrested. But it was interesting because the way the police officer who they interviewed described it is that, his little feet could barely hit the gas pedal, so he had kind of scooted all the way up in the seat. He was, reaching his little leg out to drive the car. And then he had, this is what's really funny. He apparently had one hand driving while the other hand was just hanging down. So I'm like, this boy is a mess.
Have to do that. I'm 4 foot, like 4 foot three, so I still have to do that.
you're not sure, Christopher, you still have to do that?
No, I'm 5 foot three, but yes, I'm very tiny. But.
Well, I completely appreciate all of your perspective on my Victoria surprise story. I've decided that when we do the show at the end, I want to bring in a little sort of lighthearted but serious story and hear what you guys have to say about that. But you, all three of you, have given us so much to think about. So, Christopher, I'm actually going to get another date with you to come back on the show because you're going to talk more about Jeep. Yeah, you're going to talk more about G-Man Magazine, plus you're going to bring some of your writers back so that we can all have this conversation. So, love, we thank you so much. He was a little nervous, but Mike, don't you think he did a great job for his first time?
Outstanding. Fantastic. And I just wanted to go ahead and squeeze in really quickly to Christopher that Love and G-Man Magazine. Scroll through
you.
It all today,
it's nice,
and it's fantastic.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Well, you know what, Christopher, don't go anywhere because we're going to give you a clap for G-Man Magazine.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I think I stopped it. Okay. I've got these new little this new little switchboard and buttons, and I'm still trying to figure everything out. Christopher Davis, darling, thank you so much, and best wishes to your friend, and have him get well, and tell him that we're sending his prayers, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, and everyone, that was Christopher Davis. Mike Co-op, what have you got going on? What's Drew up to lately? What's he got going on?
Oh wow, we're adding lots of new venues, we're going to be doing a charity event coming up in the middle of September. So we're kind of gearing up for that and getting merchandise and things in order. So lots of new things and just keeping busy.
What's his website so everybody can go check out the website? I know he's on Facebook, but doesn't he have a website?
Yeah, he does. It's DrewStevensMusic.com. There's a link for merchandise, music, and he also, like you said, is on Facebook and Twitter.
Well, we look forward to that, and we'll continue to follow you and have you back on some of our News Crunch shows since you did a good job, and I'm just glad that you were able to be with us because I know you work a lot, so I actually, MK, picked this date because I knew Mike was off so that he could actually be on the show. That's how bad I wanted him to be on.
Well,
the show is around him tonight.
thank you guys so much. I really appreciate the invite, and as usual, it was awesome talking to you guys.
Well,
thank you, my brother.
Say hello to your wife for us as well.
Will do.
Okay. And last but not least is your favorite entertainment co-host, Michael K. So I think we talked about this a little bit before, but MK, I've been looking inside the computer system and following your Facebook wall. We've got quite a bit of musicians coming up on the show, right?
We really do. I just want to go ahead and make a real quick mention, too, that Drew Stevens will be in Rehoboth Beach back at the Green Turtle in September, the 2nd, 3rd, 4th. So one or two. And you're going to meet me there this time, right? Because we're going to actually sit with Drew and stuff. Because you're only, like, what are you, 40 minutes away?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
So there would be no reason why I should not meet you there at that event.
Right.
But getting back to, so you've got, and I know you're working on some people also for the fall as we get into September and October too.
I do. I've got on 8/11, August 11th, I got Tommy Dalton and Scott Carey, two great new singers coming up. And then on August 25th, Chad Bradford and the Damn Band and Rexton Lee. And also I made contact with SJ Acoustic and Joshua Stedman. They're going to come on in September. We're going to share an hour with them. They've got some great new music coming up and some great venues coming up in Miami and a couple surprises. So I'm really excited to go ahead and bring them back. So, yeah, Vic, this is a lot of fun.
And, you know, actually, I know, and actually one thing that we really didn't get a chance to talk about, and I'm going to try to bring it up as I'm on the computer, because, MK, we were supposed to do some stuff on the Warford Foundation, their back-to-school drive, which is August the 6th, but, again, I got the flu and had to cancel a show and wasn't able to talk about that.
Yeah, let me just go ahead and pull it up here, too. The Warford Foundation is a fantastic organization, and they're having a back-to-school drive.
It's September the 6th from 2 to 5 at Prince George's Community College, 301 Largo Road in Largo, Maryland. So if you go on Facebook and you search the Warford, W-A-R-F-O-R-D Foundation, all the information will actually come up. And I know they're looking for school supplies and, you know, anything that you can give the kids to help them actually go back to school.
Absolutely. And gift cards are a great idea, too. So just
point that out. MK, what song should I play tonight to end the show? Do you have any ideas? We've got
let's do Shelley Rand.
We've got Shelley.
Let's do Shelley Rand, the Dancing Queen. Last time we played I'm All Over That. That's her new single coming out on Great American Country and the Country Music Channel. And that'll be up in August. But play Dancing Queen. Dancing Queen was the one that she sold 5,000 copies to the Canadian Alzheimer's Federation, and the Canadian Alzheimer's Federation commissioned her to go ahead and write this song as an honorarium for the cause.
Okay.
And it's a fantastic song, so I think you'll really enjoy it. But I want to go ahead and really quickly thank everybody up in chat. Mar Ben did a fantastic job. My co-op, my brother from another mother, and all the new guests. But, Vic, had a great time. Thanks for having me on News Crunch.
I know. It was fun. It's certainly a bit of a different format than what we're used to, but I like it because it's, you know, just a kind of a good way to get different people on with their different thoughts and their ideas. So, love, we will be back on the air very soon. I want to say goodbye to you, and then I'm going to end with Dancing Queen. Does that sound good?
You got it. Have a great night, everybody.
And again, everybody, that was entertainment co-host Michael Kay. Again, you can always find him here on At Home with Victoria and check out our shows together. Also, if you've got a story idea for me or if you've got a story idea for Michael Kay, feel free to email either one of us. So I'm going to go ahead and play the Dancing
and Fandango light. A little more than a girl with her skirt all a twirl on those whirling summer nights. He was a constant partner, her soldier so handsome and tall. She followed, he led, Ginger and Fred had nothing on them at all. Neath a spinning mirror ball. Now the dancing queen's a smile, so majestic in her chair. As he wheels her down the corridor with a flower in her hair. Now she can't recall his name. puts the phone to her ear so she can hear the strangers on the line. They say at least she's not suffering. Why, she even seems quite content. Oh, but that doesn't help when he sits by himself with the pain of remembering. Oh, what he gives to waltz with her again. But the dancing queen just smiles, so majestic in her chair, as he wheels her down the corridor with a flower in her hair. No, she can't recall.
With Victoria, an interactive news and entertainment show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Download us on iTunes as a free podcast and like us on Facebook. I'm Shelly Rand, musician and announcer for At Home with Victoria. Download my CD on iTunes and Amazon and friend me on Facebook.